Hello and welcome to Simply Save, Money Control's personal finance podcast, where we talk about all things money, your savings, investments and spending. I'm Kaizad Adajaria. In the past year and a half, credit risk funds have got a bad name. Investors invested in them and some distributors distributed them without really understanding the risks that these funds brought with them. In the last 9 months, nearly 43,000 crore worth of money went out of credit risk funds. In just the months of March to May, a little over rupees 30,000 crores went out due to the lockdown, illiquidity in the market and also the Franklin Templeton crisis. But is the fear well-founded or are credit risk funds misunderstood creatures? I'm joined today by Amit Bhosle, who is the head of risk management at ICICI Prudential Mutual Fund. Amit is here to explain me what the real risk in credit risk funds is, who these funds are best suited for. Hi Amit, welcome to our podcast. So Amit, I want to start by asking you a very basic question. We'll get into the details of how credit risk is managed by mutual funds a little later. But if you look back, it's almost now 2 years, a little less than 2 years since the IL&FS crisis began. And we've had a spate of credit events that have happened ever since. We've had a lot of money also, you know, going out of credit risk funds. Close to about 40,000 crore have moved out in terms of redemptions from credit risk funds since October 2019. You know, I'm just wondering, looking at the troubles that credit risk funds have landed themselves in, do you think that fund houses and advisors, I mean, looking back from the benefit of hindsight, do you think that they should have highlighted the risk factors more prominently in credit risk funds?
Let me answer this question by giving an example. When SEBI had conducted the scheme recategorization, it was clearly, I mean, the name was mentioned as, you know, credit risk fund. And if you were to read the documents also, it is clearly highlighting that particular thing, that that particular fund would generate returns by taking exposure to credit risk. Where I think collectively, where people may have heard, and this has been our constant refrain for past 3 to 4 years, is that people probably got colored by the return part of it. So any investment decision would basically involve two parts. One is the risk, the other is return. Now, in search of return, people, we feel, overlook the risk part of it. And invariably, without risk, return, without risk, there won't be return. So, I think somewhere it was going to catch up. We had always maintained a conservative bias as far as the credits which were selected. So, to that extent, if people would have looked at the risk part of the equation, I think the eventual decision could have been different.
You're saying that people, they didn't pay as much attention to risk despite credit risk funds being hived out in a separate category.
Okay.
So Amit, tell me, debt funds are also one of the lenders out there in the markets. You know, when companies come to borrow, they borrow from banks, they borrow from NBFCs, they borrow from mutual funds. So when they come to you to borrow a certain money, how do you evaluate them? Get AAA rated, you get AA rated, you even get weak rated companies, or you get companies that don't have a credit rating, but fund managers somehow feel that there is a lot of potential in these companies. So how do you evaluate them? What kind of companies do you accept? What kind of companies do you reject?
Yeah, so what we have done is basically we have, as part of our debt investment policy, we have categorized all potential investors into four categories. So corporates, NBFCs, HFCs and banks, right? Because we believe each of them have got different nuanced, each of them merits a nuanced approach when you are analyzing those credits. Now, linked with this, we also have stipulated what we call the minimum selection criteria. Now, for each industry, you would appreciate there will be a difference in the approach as to what is acceptable.
Yeah.
And that is basically, so you are essentially trying to find answer to two elements. One is the ability of the issuer. The second is willingness of the issuer, right? And we, for one, don't believe that, you know, everything can be reduced to a mathematical model. And then, you know, you just put in input some numbers and it will throw up some result and you go by according to that output. Actually, we believe it is a confluence of both an art and science. So, because the willingness aspect, you will come to know only after observing the behavioral traits of that issuer over a wider range of time. Now, the good part about mutual funds is that no new to credit issuers typically come to mutual funds. These are the issuers who have got graduated. So banking still remains to be the prime source of credit for most of the issuers. So having established a track record, those issuers which typically can raise money from public debt market, they come to mutual funds. So to that extent, you have got some amount of track record established for these issuers. I think that's where it is more of that touch and feel aspect rather than just going by the numbers. You take example of many of the issuers which have sadly run into problem over the period of last 2 to 2.5 years. At some point in time before their eventual downfall, they were rated the highest safety rating.
Which is what? I mean, because then they come to mutual funds, they would have come with a good rating, obviously.
Correct. But the only difference I'm saying is don't make that as your sole decision criterion.
Okay.
Right? There is much more to it. Otherwise, I'm not saying that with an element of this thing. But look at our funds. We don't have history of any credit event till now. We believe that it is not an accident. There is discipline involved. And that discipline has come out because we have chosen not to rely on that single metric. We have done our own due diligence. See, ultimately, one thing for sure, that we are acting as trustees for public money, right? Mm. who have put faith in us and given their money to us to deploy, generate returns, and give it back to them. So to that extent, there is no substitution for the due diligence. You can't outsource your due diligence to any other entity.
So Amit, when they come to you to raise money, is there a lot of bargaining? Is about the yields, about the rate, payment structure? How does a typical deal happen? Must be obviously putting down your conditions also, right?
Philosophy-wise, if you approach with the philosophy of what we call SLR, safety, liquidity, return, right? Mm. I think if you follow that particular hierarchy, safety first, then what matters is liquidity, and ultimately return. Then many of these dilemmas get sorted out themselves, right? So just to give you an example, typically when an issuer, when we originate any credit, and we originate credit on our own as well as we tap into the intermediary markets also, like banks and other intermediaries also originate credit. So there, I think the first point of call is why is the fund needed, and what is the requirement of fund, what is the use of fund which is going to be, right? Then you look at typically the borrowing capability of that particular issuer, and you ask yourself that question, that if whatever is the proposed means of repayment, if that is not going to material, what are the contingent sources of repayment which that particular issuer has? The more diverse sources of repayment that particular entity has, the better is its resilience. Now, these are some of the things which you can't actually put in in a black or white. Right? It is more of an experience judgment which has to be overlaid.
So negotiations go on for a number of days.
Yeah, so you will have what you call the typical flow credits. So like the large public sector undertakings which are acceptable across the market. There it may not be so much of customization, if I can call that. But even as you go down the rating spectrum, the role of conditions and covenants assumes a lot of importance. I will give you one or two examples. So first is, in India, typically, the issuers don't realize the importance of put option. Right?
Okay.
So, in a sense, put option provides the right but not an obligation to the lender to essentially get out of that facility. Provided, obviously, there is a wherewithal available with the issuer to repay your money. But at least that particular optionality is, many a times you see in market, it is not getting priced. If you go to developed markets, obviously, that optionality, the issuers will put a price onto that, right? Having a put option. Over here, we have seen that people maybe not realizing the true strength of this optionality. The second thing is linked to the deterioration in credit profile. You can ask for compensation for the investors because you had gone into that particular investment with a certain thesis, certain investment thesis or rationale. If there has been a change in that, then you expect to be compensated. Obviously, these things, as you are saying, that these have to be negotiated on a case-to-case basis. We can't have one-size-fits-all kind of a formula over there. So many a time, but what these events of last 1.5 to 2 years have clearly indicated is that the more you apply your mind prior to onboarding that credit, the more relaxed you will be after onboarding.
So when you said about the fact that borrowers don't really understand the value of a put option, when you get into a deal with let's say a slightly below the average credit rated company, but with whom you have reasonable amount of confidence that you will get your money back, and when you enter into a put option, what is the practical chances of you exercising the put option and getting the money back before the maturity date? I mean, does it really happen, or is it only there on paper?
No, we have seen it in case. See, ultimately, it is all these things are no substitute to client selection. So we always call the twin pillars of the credit discipline or credit philosophy are one, client selection, essentially answering the question who you want to deal with, right? And second is diversification. So how much you want to expose yourself. So those are anyway non-negotiable, criteria. So to that extent, these are the things, and I'm not just saying that the issuers don't realize the importance. Even we have seen that in many cases, the lenders also don't realize this. And the events of last 1.5 to 2 years have proven it time and again. And in fact, in some of our cases, we were able to exercise the put option and get out.
Okay, so you were able to exercise the put option and get out.
And I'm sure I can. Yeah, and many of the other peer group funds have also seen it.
Okay, and the securities, the collaterals, again, I mean, do they practically work? Have you seen in your career at ICICI when you've been managing risk, when you've been getting into these deals, has it ever happened that practically can mutual funds actually sell the collaterals and get the money back if the situation so prevails?
Just to step back, the unique situation mutual funds find themselves in is that because ultimately any collateral you have, you can get your hands on that collateral when you have when the issuer has defaulted, right? Defaulted either in terms of monetary obligation or compliance with certain covenants or conditions you have stipulated. Right? That entity defaults, then any which way the rating agencies will downgrade it to B. So the mark-to-market valuation, which mutual funds are subjected to, and I'm making this difference because people, banks are on a different regime as far as valuation is concerned. But mutual funds, we have to publish our NAVs daily basis, so we get mark to market. All our investments get mark to market on a daily basis. So to that extent, having a collateral can basically reduce your LGD. If I were to put it in a technical manner, the loss given default. But what we have seen is if you have got a very liquid collateral, and that essentially will be helping you to helping the issuer to repay your facility. That has been proven time and again. So just compare and contrast between a secured and an unsecured facility. I think as a lender, you get that comfort that it acts as a deterrent in the event should things not go as per what you had envisaged. So to that extent, there is merit in taking collateral. But if you ask me, that all sorts of collateral, are they really going to provide you a source of repayment? The answer may be no. Then it depends upon the liquid nature of the collateral and how much of the market acceptability is there.
So that also, I suppose, fund houses would be evaluating, right, before getting into a deal, whether the collateral is practical or not, whether you can even execute that or not.
I think there are two parts to that. One is you have to, essentially, again, it goes back to that client selection criterion. And the second thing is, having decided that you want to, unless it is a very liquid collateral, because of kind of the legal system delays and all, I think it may not be prudent to just base your credits decision solely on collateral. The point I'm making is, it is better to have the clear answer to that client selection question rather than getting a false sense of comfort that you have got collateral and that will cover for any eventual potential loss.
So collateral, basically what you're saying is you to be used as a measure of last resort. I mean, it should not be the first line of defense or justification why you're going for a company.
Absolutely. It can substitute your selection criteria.
And has it ever happened with you, Amit, that you have to liquidate the collateral if you could get your hands on collateral because things didn't work out as per your script? Has it ever happened?
Not really, because most of the times the issuers themselves will like, see, there are two aspects to it. One is that if you have got your client selection criterion correctly, then the client will have much more to lose than to, you know, eventually go into that liquidation kind of a situation. So we haven't, as I said, that none of our credits are actually defaulted. So to that extent, we haven't faced that. But yeah, certain other entities, we have seen that they have recovered substantive amount of the exposure. So there is a merit in, you know, obviously that collateral argument. But again, I'm stressing the point that that can't be the primary source of comfort for any credit selection.
Correct. Amit, when you must have obviously evaluated hundreds of proposals when they come to you for borrowing, tell me if any examples, like any red flags that you may have noticed in an otherwise clean image that the company would have portrayed to you, and where, you know, you would have found, or you may have found out that, you know, there is something not right, and then you may have taken a decision to not go ahead with that company. Tell us any examples that you can share with us, and how you arrived at those, how and why you arrived at that conclusion, and did it really work in your benefit?
So like the famous one of the you know, foremost infrastructure financing company in this country, which was rated AAA, you know, we stayed away from that particular entity. So that was a painful decision, right? Because that time everyone was you know, asking us that same question, that, you know, look, this particular credit is AAA rated, and many of your peer group funds have got exposure to that particular entity. Why are you not taking exposure? So some of the anomalies which we had observed was that, you know, say 1 year borrowing cost of you know, any other AAA credit and this particular credit, there was a difference of close to 100 to 150 basis points for a 1 year borrowing cost. Now, only two conclusions are possible. Either the market has got it wrong, that they are, you know, expecting such kind of pricing from this particular entity, or the rating agencies have got it wrong, because they are calling something which is not AAA, they're calling it AAA, right? Now, market is a collective wisdom of many brains over a period of time, and this was not an aberration. Sometimes what happens is, because of the demand supply dynamics, the pricing or spreads may get twisted, or they may not, maybe slightly awry. But this was a phenomenon which was observed over a period of past 15-20 years, that they always had to pay some premium over any other AAA rated name. So to that extent, the assumption which we made was that rating agencies are clearly getting it wrong. It is better to stay away. The other thing was that, see, ultimately this entity was engaged in infrastructure financing. Now, the prime source of infrastructure funding in this country has been banks. And look at the situation banks have found themselves to be in. Now, that begets a question that, you know, how can anyone else get it right when banks, which have got, you know, actually feet on ground, ears to the ground, they, over a period of time again, they have got it wrong. So ultimately, if you're going to fund the same project, there is no magic wand with which you can, you know, generate cash flows, which will only be available to you and not available to other creditors or other lenders. So to that extent, you know, some of these touch and feel or gut feel kind of thing, which made us, you know, not so much comfortable with that particular credit, and we stayed away, and that helped us.
Okay. Amit, you know, going ahead, there are, we've seen dismal GDP forecasts of India, and also the fact that, you know, because of the lockdown and the reduced economic activity, there could be more downgrades than upgrades. So what is the future of credit risk funds in India?
Yeah, so here my answer would be that you will have to look at each and every portfolio. We can't say, again, when we talk about, say, NBFCs as an industry segment, you have to appreciate that it is actually comprising of many individual lending entities. So some of them are engaged in commercial vehicle finance, some of them are engaged in gold loan finance. So a dynamic to which a gold loan company may be exposed to may be totally different from, you know, say, a commercial vehicle lender may be exposed to. So I think it may be, you know, it may not be judicious to just broad brush them under the same NBFC umbrella. We have to look at each and every entity. Again, there are headwinds. No one is denying that. And obviously, it will have impact on the individual entity's credit profile. But what we derive comfort is, most of the names which we have got in our portfolio are backed by corporate or FI you know, promoters or sponsors, who will be having the wherewithal to support these NBFCs should there be an issue. So to that extent, I think the answer is you have to look at it from a bottom-up perspective. There will be some amount of impact on all the entities. I'm not just saying, I mean, it is true of any other entity engaged in financial services, but I think, see, no one is questioning the demand once the whole post-COVID kind of scenario comes down. So it's not that India is going to just stuck in the rut of no growth. So I think to that extent, the consumer confidence will, you know, return, and then we will see again a pickup in economic activity, and that itself will set the wheels of economy rolling.
I also wanted to ask, you know, there's quite a lot of chatter for quite some time about, you know, right selling, wrong selling, etc., etc. And, you know, one of the measures that some experts in the industry have suggested that, you know, you already have a direct plan, you already have a regular plan. Okay. Now, direct plan is where you don't go through any distributor, you can invest in them directly. You think that looking at the way the withdrawals have been from credit risk funds, I don't know whether maximum withdrawals have happened from direct plans or not, but you know, given the fact that investors in these funds do need some hand holding, do need some advice, perhaps they should not be available through direct plans and only available if you come through some sort of a financial advice. Do you see that as a possibility going forward as far as these kind of nuanced mutual fund schemes are concerned?
Yeah, I would just take a step back and answer it in a manner that I think, you know, over the years, we have already seen. So we are in a phase of, you know, I would say graduation from savings to investment, right? As an economy, we are making that transition. So you see equity mutual funds. Now, we have got close to around 20-25 years of track record for equity mutual funds. If we were to have this conversation in, say, 1992, then probably there was only one mutual fund in the country.
Yeah. Right?
And then as more and more entities came up, more and more participants came into you know, existence, that itself gives the critical mass. So now you ask, you interact with any investor, intuitively they associate mutual funds with equity funds. Right? So to that extent, I think we are in that learning curve, and all of us, I'm saying that, you know, the fund houses, the distributor partners, the investors, you know, the media, everyone, we are actually, you know, going up that education curve. And sooner or later, my personal belief is that the kind of efficiencies which are there in these models, I think, translate into a better investor experience for the investors over a longer period of time. So I think this particular migration from savings to investment will only get more traction as we go forward. And once, and again, it's a necessary and sufficient condition for that migration to happen, that the whole ecosystem or all the stakeholders basically evolve to that. So I think we are in this phase currently. So to that extent, there are strains on some part of the ecosystem.
That's so you're saying that it's a learning curve. You don't need to sort of restrict to a certain set of investors only. You can actually open, let it remain available to all kind of investors. And last question, Amit, in a credit risk fund, now we've seen in equity funds, inflows are sometimes stopped when they reach a certain size. In credit risk funds, do you also feel that inflows should be stopped once it reaches a size so that, you know, the risk level is constrained to a certain set of investors, preferably knowledgeable investors only, and not people who basically come into a credit risk fund looking just at the past returns?
I think this is a very important question. And I think, you know, when the second pillar of the credit philosophy, which I mentioned, which was diversification, intuitively people tend to associate it with the investment side or asset side of any fund's balance sheet. I think the critical piece is to have diversification in your liability side also. So as long as you have got a granular liability portfolio, we have observed that particular thing, you know, helps. Because what happens is typically a large institutional investors may have his own constraints because of the investment guidelines which they may be governed with, or, you know, any other sources. So ultimately, these people are parking their surplus funds in those funds. So to that extent, there may be an argument in favor of putting a cap on the single investor AUM in these funds. We have put in all funds wherein we have got exposure to the relatively lower rated instruments, and that has helped us to remain in good state. So I will answer this question again. You have to look at it from an AUM perspective. How much of that AUM is essentially a granular in nature, and how much of it is relatively volatile in nature? Because the larger the quantum of volatile AUM, you may be exposed to a problem. Because should there be redemptions of that particular portion of the AUM, then you may not have commensurate liquidity on the investment side.
So you're saying basically diversification among investor base is necessary.
It's critical.
Okay. So thank you so much for your knowledgeable insights on credit risk consulting.
Okay, thank you, Prasad.
That's all from our side, folks. Keep listening to Simply Save. And for more news, views, and updates, log on to moneycontrol.com.